Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
You guys see that? It was Blessing going on adventures as Indiana Jones. You love to see it. What's up? I'm Tim Geddes. Joining me, as always, is Greg Miller.
Smackers, smackers everywhere. Nick Scarpino sucks.
Okay.
We go. Yep, we have Nick Scarpino.
What's a smacker?
Money. It's money.
Money.
It's
like
dollars. Okay.
I want to stop. I want to stop calling currency. dollars and call them smackers, smackers. You know.
Where do you put the smackers in?
Smackaroos. Smackaroos.
No. Where do I put the dollars? I put them in my coffers.
Yeah. Your coffers, God.
God damn. Andy Cortez, save us somehow.
I can't. I'm sorry. It's beyond.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. That is beyond you. But the one man it is not beyond is Blessing out of Yoea Jr. making his first appearance on Kind of Funny in Review. A rare appearance on Kind of Funny Prime content.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's nice to be here. I'm very excited for this.
It's going to be good. We had you for a very special reason. Of course, this is Indiana Jones in Review, where we're going to rank and review all of the Indiana Jones movies. The reason we're doing this is there is a new Indiana Jones movie coming out, but that's not until, 2022, 2023? With the pandemic, who actually knows? But it's going to happen at some point. But they announced that Machine Games are making an Indiana Jones video game. A lot of excitement about that. And in that excitement, it was revealed that Blessing has never seen the Indiana Jones movies. I have also never seen the Indiana Jones movies. Crazy. You guys have seen all the movies?
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
And have you seen any of them, Andy?
Similar to a lot of the other 80s movies we've done here on In Review, my dad watched them. I was in the room. I absorbed a lot of the information and quotes and moments, but I couldn't tell you what happens sequentially in these movies at all.
I'm right there with you. And then Greg, you and Nick both have watched all of them.
Yeah. Indiana Jones was never my favorite thing by any stretch of the imagination. So like I went into this and I'm like, okay, I know them. I've seen them. I saw the last one, Crystal Skull, the best one, in theaters with IGN back in the day or whatever. It's terrible. It's awful. But like I know all the movies. Temple of Doom used to be one of those movies that you as a kid want to watch when I'd go to my aunt and uncle's house, but I would get so scared by when they're in the bug tunnel and stuff, which will make sense to you next week, I guess.
Yeah,
but what I was surprised by watching this one was, oh yeah, I know this one. I've seen it. Don't look at it, Marion. Like, I know what I'm getting into.
Right.
But it was that thing of watching it where it was that slow realization of like, I don't think I've ever seen this theatrical cut, not like broken up on TBS on a Saturday afternoon, nor do I think I've ever sat all the way through a viewing of it. Because I knew the parts, but I was like, all right, I don't remember this exactly. And though, okay, move on.
Well, there you go. This is about to be a super fun in review, one of the rare times where a lot of us maybe haven't had full exposure to all of this stuff. This is Kind of Funny's In Review, where we rank and review different film franchises. Currently, we are doing Indiana Jones in review, and we are also about to close out Edgar Wright in review with Baby Driver. So that's very exciting stuff. You can get the show ad-free and watch it live, just like some of our Patreon producers can do. James Davis, Graham of Legend, David Mintel, Al Tribesman, Cassandra Ramirez, Sven McHale, and the Nanobiologist. Thank all of you for all of your support in making this cool show happen. And speaking of supporting over on patreon.com/kindoffunny, our platinum reward this month, Barrett, if you could please bring it up, is the Kind of Funny Valentine's Day pup print by the community member Rain. This is super awesome. I love it. You can see Lulu hanging out with the King Porty down there. We got Thomas on Cecil. I really like Thomas's Sailor Moon look. You know what I mean? Got a little fun stuff going on there.
Oh, look at that zoom. Wow.
Yeah, we got, of course, the Splash Sisters, the Pugs up there, and then Moose holding Fort down on the bench, ready to fuck Cecil's day up.
Whoa.
You'll love to see it.
I do love how accurately Lulu's proportions were, you know, because you see Lulu's body, it's like, oh, it's a big dog. No, she's like, she looks like a big dog, but just shrunk down.
She pictures, like, perceptively big.
Yeah,
I will say. And then
I agree,
but I do think it's funny because like I don't hang out with Moose a lot. I've seen Moose.
You guys
in
had
life,
that
like,
one time. You guys got drunk together and it ended badly. You got a big fight like, outside of the bar.
Yeah, and so like I don't know if this is like usually like Moose's like attitude, but I think it's funny because I feel like the attitude of these two dogs are switched. Where I feel like Moose is a little more sweet, and Lulu's the one who's a little more mischievous. But that's just because I know Lulu and hang out with
Moose. Say that word one more time.
I've met Moose like very few times, and Moose seems vicious. When you put Moose is in the right situation.
Yeah, Moose is a little fuck. He's a little bitch. Fuck for sure.
I love him.
But anyways, you can get this print, patreon.com/kindoffunny. It's super awesome. I love it. Can't wait to hang it somewhere. But Greg Miller, you had your hand raised for a while. What's up?
No, don't worry about it. It's over.
It's over. It's over. It's gone. Everything has happened. Let's get into it. This is a show. You can watch it on youtube.com/kindoffunny. You can listen to it later as a podcast. Just search for Kind of Funny in Review on your favorite podcast service, and we'll be right there for you. Today, we are brought to you by our Kind of Funny Plays channel, but I'll tell you about that later. Let's get right into it. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Was anyone else here surprised that this wasn't called Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, I was wondering if that was going to get you guys.
It got me. Definitely got me. Nick, did you see this in theaters?
I didn't know that.
No, that was impossible. It was impossible.
No, I was going to say, I don't remember seeing the first one in theaters. The first one I think I saw in theaters was Temple. And I for sure saw The Last Crusade, which, yeah, I loved.
Yeah, because this came out June 12th, 1981, a runtime of 2 hours and 11 minutes, directed by Steven Spielberg, which, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, this is the first Steven Spielberg movie we've done in review.
Well, he executive produced the Transformer stuff, but this is probably we did Jurassic Park. No, we didn't do Jurassic Park yet.
We're doing it later this year.
Oh, yeah, this might
be then. And he has since removed his name from all involvement in the Transformers franchise. He's like, I don't want to be a part of that, dude.
Bro, I would have done that the second the first one hit. I'd have been like,
a common misconception. A common misconception is that Steven Spielberg did Batman v Superman because everybody loved it so much.
What he did, though,
Zack Snyder, who's coming back in March, motherfuckers, strap in.
My mic was muted, Greg, but I just want to let you know that I did a high pitched laugh at that one. That got me.
Thank you, Barrett. See, it's a smart person's joke. That's why none of you laughed. Except Steven, you're not on my bad side yet.
I just wanted to come and go. I just wanted to come and go.
Just wait. Steven, I don't have anything planned yet, but I'll get there.
Became a household name for directing 1975 summer blockbuster Jaws. He then directed box office hits Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T., and the adventure films in the Indiana Jones series. He later would do The Color Purple and Empire of the Sun. After that, Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan. This motherfucker's crazy, man. When you look at this list, it's like, what? How? Yeah.
In a lot of ways, like Spielberg for me defines the 80s, right? He is like, when you think of the formation of the blockbuster, like the summer blockbuster movie, like Steven Spielberg is the guy that absolutely made that happen. For me, at least. Like, you have George, and the George Lucas Steven Spielberg connection was just like powerhouse.
It's the Wombo combo, man.
Like having Lucas produce and having Spielberg direct, and then having Lawrence Kasdan, I think, wrote the screenplay for this.
Yeah,
is that
he
correct?
Did.
Mm-hmm. Come on, dude. That's the team. That's the dream team right there. And they would, I think the Raiders trilogy kind of speaks for itself. Maybe they got, but when we get to the fourth one, we'll pass judgment on that one.
But one thing I didn't realize, because I was a stupid kid, Minority Report was also directed by Steven Spielberg. I just thought it was a dope movie.
Not originally. Oh, really? Oh, Minority Report. I'm sorry. AI. I thought you were saying AI. Sorry. Yeah, Minority Report was. It was dope, based on a Philip K. Dick story.
What a good-ass movie, Minority Report. You know what? Add that to the one-off movies I'd love to one-off.
Yeah.
Man, what a good-ass movie. And we're also going to make that a verb now. Let's one-off it.
We're one-offing it.
We're going to one-off
in
it.
It's good. Together. I'm going to one-off in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
You beat me one off one.
That was good.
The music was done by John Williams, who served as a composer for Raiders of the Lost Ark. He said that the music did not have to be serious for the film and was instead theatrical and excessive, and that he was like, fuck it, I'm going all out, which is so cool. So damn cool. And I also just love how excessively they play the theme in this, which is how these hero movies should play, man.
They love the theme in this movie so much. Every time I play it, I got kind of hype. Like, the theme is legitimately good, and John Williams apparently just cannot be defeated because he has hits after hits.
Blessing and I were talking before you guys came in, and I was just like, the theme from this movie is one of my all-time favorites, because John Williams back in the day, at least in his earlier work, just loved the brass section. And Blessing, what was it you said?
Oh, I said I want somebody to love me as much as John Williams loves brass.
Yeah,
he really does.
Because he is not afraid to let that trumpet just go off, man. I mean, you've got this. Greg, is there anything better than the John Williams Superman score?
There is not, Nick Scarpino. Not by a mile. I'll tell you that
not
right
by
now.
A mile.
He yeah, there's some. There's
Jaws, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Superman, the original theme. I mean, and there's no disrespect to the work they did with Man of Steel, but like the iconic Superman theme, and then of course Jurassic Park. Come on, I mean, give the man multiple Oscars for Christ's sake.
I think when people try to like put Hans Zimmer and John Williams against each other, immediately, like all you got to do, what's going to give you the dub for John Williams is like, Hans Zimmer, you did have that weird ass song in Spider-Man where Jamie Foxx is Electro, and you're mm-hmm. doing that.
Wait, was that Hans Zimmer?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that docks points.
He lied to me. He bet him. Remember that one, Tim? It was a terrible song.
Yeah. Never forget. He does it in his concert.
What
in
a
live in Prague.
Rocks. Does Hans Zimmer collaborating with Disco Junkie XL in Batman v Superman?
Why are you talking so much shit about him? You know the new Snyder Cut's going to feature 45 more minutes of Junkie XL's compositions, right?
I don't care. I'm down for it.
I was going to say, there are so many moments in this movie that remind me so much of Star Wars. Obviously, you know, it's not a huge surprise, but, you know, it's Han Solo running around in a desert location, and there are just the music is nonstop. I just got to imagine, like, I would love to imagine that John Williams is in real time on minute 34, just like, fucking shit, man, this will
sweating.
Not end.
He's like, oh, yeah.
Almost like Tom Cruise. Like, it feels like the more he runs in a movie, the better the movie is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, this was one of those things, too, back in the 80s, and Greg will probably remember this, but when you watch the first, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and you saw what Spielberg was capable of from just an action standpoint, the story itself is, we'll get to that when we start going through the plot, but from just the composition standpoint, how he moves the camera and how he shoots action scenes, it was always just so, it was just so sad he never got a shot at a Star Wars film. To me, at least. I know he probably didn't want to do that because he didn't want to be compared to George Lucas because they were like, they're best friends. But like, to me, I just always thought, man, how awesome would it be in the 90s he got a shot at the prequels or he got a shot at the at episode 7, 8, and 9.
That so with that, there's actually a lot of pretty interesting things here with the Lucas connection. So this movie had a budget of $18 million. George Lucas made what was at the time an unusual deal for the film. The studio financed the film's entire $18 million budget. In exchange, Lucas would own over 40% of the film and collect almost half of the profits after the studio grossed a certain amount. It turned out to be a very lucrative deal for Lucas, allowing him to then go on and make a lot more money. Paramount executive Michael Eisner said that he felt the script for the film was the best he had ever read. It ended up getting a box office of $389.9 million, though pre-release polling showed little audience interest in the film, especially compared to Superman 2, Greg. Raiders of the Lost Ark became the highest-grossing film of 1981, won a shit ton of awards at the 1982 Academy Awards. Raiders of the Lost Ark received 5 awards, Best Film Editing, Best Production Design, best sound editing, and best visual effects. It is the only Indiana Jones film to be nominated for Best Picture, but it did not get it. It lost to Chariots of Fire. It was also nominated for 3 other things: Best Cinematography, Best Original Score, and Best Director, which it also lost out to Chariots of Fire. Sorry. It lost to Warren Beatty for Reds. It lost original score to Chariots of Fire. Which is pretty iconic.
It's not Indiana Jones. I don't know, dude.
And that's the thing, like you talked about earlier, right? Well, like the score of this movie is so perfect for like the pulp like nature of it. It's just fun. Like when you listen to that score, you just think, let's go out there and like fight the Nazis. Let's go out there and like have an adventure. You know, like why does he have a whip? Who knows, Tim? It doesn't matter. You know, why is he wearing a leather jacket in South America where it's got to be at least 100 degrees and 100% humidity? It doesn't fucking matter.
So a fun fact here is traditionally when one of his films is about to open, George Lucas goes on vacation to get away from all the hullabaloo. As Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope was about to open, Lucas went to Hawaii where he was joined by Steven Spielberg. When the grosses for the film came in and it was clear it was going to be a hit, Lucas relaxed and was able to discuss other topics with his friend. It was at this point that Spielberg confessed he always wanted to direct a James Bond movie. And then Lucas was like, no, 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 no. let's do this thing called Raiders of the Lost Ark. And he pitched him on his idea that was what would end up being Indiana Jones. But similarly to how Lucas took the old serials from the olden ages, the you know, sci-fi stuff and turned that into Star Wars, this is the same idea here of turning those Samurai. Old kind of Western things into
the pulp action
Indiana Jones, which is really freaking cool. After the trip, they got together, developed the script with Lawrence Kasdan. So it's like, damn, man, we got the dream motherfucking team on this. Bless it. Your first time watching this, what were your thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. Like, I'm gonna eat my words a little bit on KFGD, because that's kind of where this whole thing spawned, of me talking about how I had never seen Indiana Jones. I also mentioned that I have really no interest in seeing Indiana Jones, and that's not like anything against the character or the movies or anything. That was just mainly the idea of, yeah, this movie series is from the 80s, and nothing about, you know, going out and being this adventurer who's chasing after treasure really appeals to me, just at the core of what that is. Like, that sounds like Uncharted, that sounds like things that I've liked, but I don't really feel like I gotta go like get up and go rent an Indiana Jones movie to watch in 2021. That said, now that I've actually watched Indiana Jones, like, I've really enjoyed it. For a movie that came out, what, like 1981, the action in this movie, I feel like, ages very well, where there are multiple scenes that I found myself enthralled with what was going on. The scene where he's in the car chase and he's in front of the car, and the driver's like trying to speed up so he can hit the car in front of him, and then he goes under the car and then climbs back around. That was super cool. The fight with the tall dude, that was pretty cool. Like, the amount of violence in this movie caught me off guard. I was not expecting as much blood as there was. And so overall, from an action perspective, I thought the movie was really good. From the story, for what the movie is, I think it was really entertaining. And Harrison Ford, amazing. Like, he's very much Han Solo. He's very much that dude who's like, yeah, 100%. I'm charming.
He's Harrison Ford.
Yeah, he's Harrison Ford. And that's one of the things, is I was going to say that, like, his performance in this movie was awesome, but I don't even know if I can call it a performance, because it feels like he's just naturally charming and naturally attractive. And that very much shines through in this movie in a way that I had me fall in love a bit with the character of Indiana Jones. So for that, I appreciate it.
Nick, what about you? Have you seen this, I'm sure, hundreds of times?
A bunch of times, yeah. I mean, obviously, the more you watch it, the more it starts thinning out a little bit, especially when you compare it to sort of like the last Star Wars film, where you're like, oh, there's a lot of similarities here, where a lot of the plot devices are just discover the thing so we can discover the thing. You got to get the thing so we can get the thing. And it's all just an excuse for Indy to go around the world and do crazy stuff. But one of the things that I always love is I love the character of Indiana Jones, because he is kind of a cocky asshole. And he's constantly biting off more than he can chew. And he kind of get, like, every once in a while, he just gets knocked straight on his ass. And, like, my favorite part of this movie is when he fights the big German guy by the plane. And he punches him a bunch of times, and then kind of looks at him. And the guy just hits him one time, and his legs wobble, and he just falls on his ass. That, to me, is Indiana Jones in a nutshell, where he's always just sort of, like, flying by the seat of his pants. Really has no idea. Like, there's that moment where he's like, I'm going to go catch up with the truck. And Sala's like, how? And he goes, I don't know, man. I'm making all this shit up as I go. Yeah. Like, we're just going to go do this thing. I got to go do it. And you just can't not like Han Solo. And that was why it was perfect casting, because they were just like, what if Han Solo had his own movie? But it was like, you know, back in 1936 on Earth. That's pretty much what you get here.
Greg, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, Indiana Jones is Raiders of the Lost Ark is an incredibly fun movie. I think, again, yeah, having sat down and watched the theatrical here, it's like, all right, I feel like it's a bit long in places. I feel like we could have tightened this up a little bit. I think it shows its age. Like, you know, the action is fun at times, but then there's plenty of times where it's just these weird limp punches or whatever that are going on. But it's also like, hats off to Harrison Ford for doing a lot of the stuff. Not all of it, obviously, but through it. But I think that, you know, there's such a... Harrison Ford, the way he captures your attention, the way you are locked on it, the way you are enjoying it, and the way he is that, you know, swashbuckling jerk to an extent, right? Of like even when Marion meets him in the bar for the first time, or is reintroduced to him, right? And she's like, I was a child. You're like, well, how young was she? What is going on? But it's like, you go through, and like, their chemistry I like so much. And I like the way they use, I think Karen Allen's performance is great in this, in a real establishing way of somebody who isn't a pushover, right? And also, in the same sense, you know, Indy isn't like falling all over her, but also isn't being an ass. Like, that scene where he gets there and he's about to release her, and he's like, actually, I have to leave you behind. It's like such a cool, like,
she's like, don't do
the dynamic that normally wouldn't happen here for like your straight, you know, your blue.
But The Rock would never do that, right? There would never be a moment in a Rock movie where The Rock left the damsel in distress tied to a pole, right? Because he's kind of like, oh, I got, we got it. There's a greater picture here that we have to figure out. But
also the way they do a good job of not really making in distress. She is, right? She is, you know, bait, obviously. They've captured her, put her there. But, like, establishing her in the front is just, like, she can drink anybody under the table, and she uses that to her advantage. And even when she grabs the knife and gets out, like, she's in control of the situation until she's not, and the other Nazi guy shows up and stuff. Like, they do a good job of making her feel fun and lively in this, where she could just be window dressing.
I always loved her introduction, right? Which is obviously, you touched on it, right? She's drinking one of the patrons under the table for money. And then Indiana Jones walks in and she has a moment where she's like, oh, Indiana. And then just punches him in the face.
Yeah, slaps him when she
like, you piece of shit. And I'm like, all right, I'll always like that character for that one little. And then that was a strong call for them. And they were like, this guy did her wrong and like took advantage of her. And she's like, fuck you, dude. You're a piece of shit. And then obviously they go on an adventure together because he owes her money, and that's great. But yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
No, you're doing it. It's an enjoyable movie. I'm excited to stack it up against Raiders I'm fucking this up all the time. Sorry.
Crusade.
Crusade, right? No, the next one.
Temple of Doom.
Multiple choice down until we get the one I want. Sorry, because I remember that being such a more lively movie, a more colorful movie, a more visually interesting movie than I found this one. This was the one, again, I haven't watched it in theatrical, and I'm watching it. It's like, oh, I feel it being like a product of its time. It's like leaving the 70s, coming into what the 80s are and will become for action movies. So to see what the sequel is going to be, I'm excited for.
Nick.
Tim, I have a question for you. Does the Indiana Jones ride make a lot more sense to you now?
I mean, here's my thing. My thoughts on this movie are like, my touchstone to Indiana Jones is the ride more than anything. And honestly, I'm going to get a lot of shit for this. I feel like the movie did not live up to my hype and love of that ride. And I think in many ways it did when it comes to the music, when it comes to the action is so awesome. But the character of Indiana Jones, I disagree with like what Blessing was saying, is I find kind of lacking, where I feel like he never is quite as cool as Han Solo, and he's honestly not even as cool as Harrison Ford is to me, where he's fun and I like him being a teacher, like those bits and like his backstory are interesting to me, but he isn't as cool as I thought he was going to be, and that's me bringing baggage into the movie and even expecting something different. The whip's cool. The action
the whip
stuff
is what
is
did
cool.
it for me. As Yo, soon as I saw the whip, I was like, this guy's cool.
That's rad, and the action and what he does, all that stuff's great, but like his character itself kind of isn't enough in the direction of any of the things that I like about Harrison Ford characters, or even like James Bond type characters. And him being an adventurer and being a little bit more on the like, I'm running into this and I'm not really sure if it's going to work out. I like that stuff, but I just feel like it's not backed up by a human that I am like super, super, super enthralled with. Don't really have any problems with it. It's just Indiana Jones is not as cool of a character as I thought and expected him to be. But the thing with the movie is it is so immaculately put together that even though I know this movie from Family Guy references more than I actually know it from itself,
yeah, like exactly
just from pop culture, like over the years, like obviously I know so much about it, like almost the greatest hits of the entire franchise. Watching it, it is still genuinely enthralling, and the way that it's shot and the way that the music is like worked into it and through the edit and all of it. Like, I agree with Greg. It's a little long. Like, it definitely feels like the movie ends and then there's like a whole other addendum that keeps going. So that was probably my one real pacing issue. But besides that, it's just like the way that the camera's used, the way that dialogue is focused on, and like every single thing adds, I love it. I just wish that it felt a little bit more than what my major criticism of Uncharted's been forever, which is kind of like, it is the get the thing to get to the other thing to do the other thing. And like, movies have just evolved so far past that, to be genuine, like to have all the elements I love and be like legitimately great, that it's weird to go back to see this. But man, for its time, I can't believe that this movie is as competent, like an insult, as like well done as it actually is.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Andy, what are your thoughts on it?
I think it's just such a timeless movie. It just holds up so well. Writing, action, everything just seems like there's nothing in there that really looks insanely dated. And I don't know if it's the idea that it's, you know, this movie that was made in the late 70s, early 80s to portray a movie in the late 30s. I don't know if that kind of lends to it, but There's almost a sort of silent picture vibe that I get during some of the fight scenes where it's just it's brass playing and it's and John Williams is going off. And you get so many expressions from the actors that you could mute what little dialogue there would be where the strong man is walking up to Indy saying, get over, you know, come down here. And then Harrison Ford does such a great job of being on the plane, being like, oh, shit, here we go. You know, and he doesn't have to say anything because it's just that you know what the character is. He is, like what Nick was saying, so in over his head, so, like not ready for this, but just kind of like, fuck it. We're flying by the seat of our pants. Whatever. I'm going to go down there and fight this giant dude and hopefully I can, you know, get one in on him. And I love that moment where he does get knocked over in such an animated, cartoonish way and does fall down to his knees. Yeah. I love the characterization. I think so much of the Mary and Indy kind of back and forth is it's cute. It's cute as hell. It's charming. I did read that there was a fact that I think early on when the movie was made, she was 15 when they were first in a relationship, but then they changed that to make her 18, just to make it seem less awful and creepy.
That's good. Yeah,
there was a re-release that sort of changed that fact and that lore or whatever. Yeah, I think it's a good ass movie, man. Just front to back, it's a solid, fun film with kind of intriguing characters and villains, and it I just had a blast with it.
I think you nailed the timeless thing, because that was my thing going back and watching this movie. Is it reminded me of in college I took a class that was Hitchcock. Like I talked to Nick actually like a few weeks ago on like some piece of content about Hitchcock movies. Only reason I watched those movies was because I took a class on it, and for that class every week we would go back and we would watch like Psycho or Rear Window or Birds or whatever the movie is. And watching Indiana Jones kind of took me back to that, in the way where you're absolutely right that if you took away dialogue, a lot of the action in this movie would still carry along, because in itself it tells a story. Like when you have that scene where they're doing the whole chase and they're Indy's trying to find Marion and all this stuff, right? And all the stuff is happening that is being carried forward by the action of the scene. And you get to places like that one dude coming out and like swinging his sword and challenging Indy to a fight. And he pulls out his gun and just shoots.
So great.
Like that is such a, what feels like a black and white film kind of thing, where the action is well done. The action is serious, but they have all these good moments of humor that almost like reflect forward on like what we'll get from Marvel movies eventually, where the action is carrying things forward. But then, boom, out of nowhere, you get a little bit of humor in that.
Don't be too serious. Yeah, add a little bit of levity. Yeah.
Tim, do you have... Sorry, go ahead, Buzz.
Oh, no, go for it, go for it.
I was going to say, do you have the trivia on that gunshot?
Yeah, the fun thing about that scene is that it was like semi-improv, where everyone on the set got sick, except for Spielberg, because Spielberg was the only person that refused to eat the food that they had, and he brought a bunch of SpaghettiOs from America, which is really random, but he was only eating SpaghettiOs, so he didn't get sick. Everyone else got sick, including Harrison Ford, and they couldn't get the whip action down, and he was like, what if I just fucking shot him?
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, yeah, let's do that. So that's what that scene ended up being, which is like awesome. Really cool, because like that definitely feels like such a defining moment for him.
That's the thing about it, where I think, you know, you talk about like maybe it's a bit too long, and I know Nick was talking about the story getting thinner the more you watch it. And what we're talking about right now is that it has this silent film quality to it. That was what I found so shocking about it, is that every scene I felt like had a moment where you're like, oh, that's Indiana Jones. That's like an iconic scene. Like that's something you remember, have seen parodied, whether it's Family Guy or whatever. Like there's something in there on every level, to the point that like even the stuff I didn't recall well, or if I don't know if I've seen it or not since I'm a kid, of like, you know, when his partner from school comes over to Indy's house and he's in the robe and they talk, and like just the pan around the house of like seeing Indy, this teacher, but also this adventurer who's so obsessed with the journey, and how in disarray his house is and the way maps and books are spread out. I was like, this is just like, even though this isn't one of the iconic moments I'm talking about, this, you know, one perfect frame kind of shit is like setting up so well who he is, of what Indiana Jones is.
I think a lot of it was Spielberg's use of the camera, right? We're so conditioned to like a coverage way of shooting things, where it's like starting wide, go and cut in close, and then you have over the shoulders and like that. And there's some of that in this film, but Spielberg was really, really, had a lot of fun moving the camera around. There's a lot of dolly shots. There's a lot of dolly shots that reveal other characters. And it's just, it was just very planned, the choreography of the camera and how they moved it. And I think a lot of that lends itself to that visual style that you just don't see too much anymore because it's just not economical.
Yeah. Yeah, Tim, to your point of Indy feeling wanting to get a little bit more from Indiana Jones as a character, I totally feel where you're coming from there too. Like, I think I come at it from the very much an opposite perspective of my expectations were kind of on the floor for this movie. We're coming and I was like my the things I expected from this movie were, all right, I know Indiana Jones is like this confident dude is going to come through and save the day. Like, in my eyes, he's like the Luke Skywalker, like the perfect hero. And this is me before I watched this movie, and I expected most of this movie to take place in the jungle for some reason. Maybe that's in a future movie, but I was like, that's where my expectations were. And so when we started this movie and you get the shot of him in the jungle doing his thing, but then immediately get him being a professor of archaeology at a university, I was like, oh, I didn't know we were coming here. And then when you get into a bit more of him, like, you know, wanting to go after the Ark of the Covenant because he is this archaeologist dude that wants it in a museum and all this stuff, that was enough for a movie that was going to go into action upon action and go into like, okay, cool, let's meet Marion, let's meet all these other characters, that it exceeded my expectations. Though I totally think you're correct in saying that, like, yeah, no, this, he, when you compare him to other Harrison Ford characters or other, like, other main characters in movies in general, like, there is a little bit to be desired there.
I mean, for me, what it really comes down to is he's not as cool as I thought he was going to be. And he's not quippy like Nathan Drake, which I expected him to be. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's like, that's the only criticism I have of it.
Well, there's other criticisms you can render, right? Like, the two criticisms that I always have of this movie is that there's not a ton of growth in the character by the end of it. Like, it really is just about the spectacle and the adventure, right? And there's no disrespect to the franchise, but, like, this one, above all, they really wanted you to be, like, in the world and focus on it. But I never feel at the end of this movie that Indy's changed at all. And I know that because he's walking down the stairs pissed off that he didn't get to keep the Ark of the Covenant. Like, he didn't get to keep this thing that he just saw nuke a whole fucking island full of people, right? And so to me, I'm like, all right, Indy, you didn't learn shit. And then obviously, like, you don't have, I never felt that the relationship with Marion was gonna progress beyond, like, you know, a certain point I don't think they did either, right?
That's one of the things I do like about it. I think, you know, especially coming off of In Review, Edgar Wright and World's End and Scott Pilgrim, and we talked about these characters that we don't like and we don't agree with and yada yada. Mm-hmm. Indiana Jones is a great character that is flawed, and I love him despite that. And, it, you know, in some ways because of it, right? Like, I do love that scene at the end that I think, you know, I think so many directors and writers and stuff would beat you over the head with it earlier and do a million things of him with the rocket launcher and the villain turning around and having the trite thing of like, we're a lot alike, you and I. You wouldn't, they've already had that conversation. But, the you know, the villain calls him on it. I'm just like, everybody back, he's not going to do it. Like, he understands what this is. He blah, blah. And, like, that realization, Harrison Ford, again, plays all in his face of, like, fuck, he's right. Like, see, yeah, I can't do this.
Yeah.
That brings me to my other huge criticism of this movie, which is, and this is obviously, Barrett's probably heard this before,
these
but the big
only,
criticism.
These are the only two criticisms that Nick has.
This is literally it. This is it, honestly.
Second one, yeah.
But the big one is that, and this is the joke about this movie, is that Indiana Jones does absolutely, like, nothing to further the plot of the movie. Like, he doesn't actually stop the Nazis at the end, and he doesn't actually do like, if you took him out of this movie, it's conceivable that the whole thing would have played out exactly like it did, and the Ark would have just sat on that island forever, because he doesn't. So
he's the one who finds it, he's the one who drags it out.
Had he not been there, they would have taken it from Marion. They would have figured it out. They would have had the medallion both sides of it, and they would have figured it out, taken it out, and boom. Granted, the United States government getting it, you could argue, yeah, they needed it and they kept it safe, whatever, in that giant warehouse. But my problem is that at the end with the rocket launcher, he should have known. He should have been doing that to get caught, to save Marion and say, close your eyes. Because we don't know how he knew not to look in the Ark. And that's a glaring plot hole to me that I never realized until watching it this time. I was like, hey, how the fuck did he know to close your eyes?
Yeah, I remember
that. Because I don't know what the fuck's going on over there, right?
My dad pointed that out to me when we first watched it together. It was like, huh, yeah, that's interesting.
He should have known. He should have done, because of his expertise or because of the things that he learned along the way, he should have known that's the trump card. That's how I'm going to beat these guys. By getting caught, I have to get caught to save Marion. I have to whisper in her ear, close your eyes. And then don't worry about the blood-curdling screams that are happening around you. Just close your eyes. Because at the end of the movie, he just goes, close your eyes. And then this last time, I was like, how did... And I looked it up. Apparently, there's some scenes that were cut where when they go to the wise old man in Morocco, he says some of the scripture on the thing says, like, don't look into the ark.
Close your eyes, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why when they go into the Well of Souls, you'll notice they don't touch the ark. They put the poles through and they open it up because whoever touches the ark apparently dies as well. But I guess that never really came across in the movie to me. So I always felt like that fucking character progression never really. I know, man. Spielberg, go back. You need to throw some fucking new music in this thing and put some CG in there, man. It's this little CG Harrison Ford action.
Yeah. Talk to your friend Georgie and see how that goes.
Get rid of the shotguns. Give them walkie talkies.
Put it on HBO Max. No, remake the movie.
Tim, did you know how this movie is going to end?
No.
Because when I got there, I was like, what the fuck kind of twist is this? Like, when the faces started melting, legit, I was like, wow, this is out of left field.
It's a lot. In a way,
like, if I had a critique with this movie, it would be that comes out of nowhere. And, like, I understand the idea of, well, they kind of build up the idea that the Ark is this big thing, and the reason they're going after it is because of this occult shit. I wish there was a little bit of build up there of, like, somewhere sprinkled in, we get an example that there is some, like, supernatural shit going on. When you go from 0 to 100,
wind kicks up for no reason, right? That's the same thing
happening.
When you go from 0 to 100 that way, it was like, yo, what the fuck did this come from? Like, where, how did we get here?
Bless, in Uncharted 1, I did not think I was going to be fighting demon creature cat people. I had no idea. Scared the shit out of me. Never played it again.
I mean, honestly, that ending made me appreciate Uncharted way more because I was like, oh, I get it now. I understand
why Uncharted made that bizarre-ass choice. Yeah.
By the way,
I got a bunch of facts.
I don't know if you have facts on the Nazis, but Hitler really, apparently, really did look for religious relics because
he was super into the cult. That's why, like, it's funny because I didn't line it up on purpose at all, but last night we watched Indiana Jones and the night before we watched Captain America, First Avenger. And it was that thing of, like, starting up Indiana Jones is like, oh, fuck, right, I forgot. We're getting more weird Nazi people going after weird stones and shit, trying to fucking give Hitler the upper hand. But it didn't work, USA. Am I right, everybody?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I got a couple facts that tie into a couple things we've said, but we moved on really quick here. So Greg made an E.T. reference a second ago. Steven Spielberg wrote a script during shooting breaks on location of this film. When Melissa Matheson was there to visit her husband, Harrison Ford, Spielberg dictated to her a story idea he had. That script was eventually E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Harrison Ford, what are you eating over there? Reese's Pieces. I'd follow him anywhere.
Oh. Hey, write it down. That's good.
That's good. Hey, Steve, how long has it been since you phoned home? What's that? Phone home, Steve.
And then, blessing.
Yo, let me see your penis. Oh, looks like the main character.
Jesus, what do you do? Eat, drink more water, Steve.
What do you mean? It looks like the main. How do you know?
He had a rough idea, and then he needed to see a penis to really drive it home. That's got to be the main character.
Oh, no. But Bless, this one's for you based on the scary faces. The film was originally given an R rating because of the exploding head and the face melting. But they added layers of fire in front of the face to make it less graphic. I don't know how much accomplished that, but hey, it didn't get an R rating. Hey,
nothing's worse than the snakes, man. I legitimately thought,
oh my God,
snakes. Oh, Andy. Yeah. Andy, just wait.
I legitimately thought, like, I accidentally switched movies when the faces started melting. I was like, oh, is this, did I fuck up? Like, is Amazon Prime, like, having issues? What's going on here?
You have a different version.
Tim,
the last thing I have for you. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I think Christine Winston did these, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. They won Best Visual Effects. I don't see Stan Winston's name on it. Best Visual Effects. Richard Edlund, Kit West, Bruce Nicholson, and Joe Johnston.
I would have put $1 million that Stan Winston did these visual effects.
But Nick, a fact for you here is a fan theory that was popularized by the Big Bang Theory states that Indiana Jones plays no role in the final outcome of the story, since despite his best efforts, the Nazis still end up obtaining the Ark and killing themselves opening it. In the absence of Indiana Jones, the Nazis would have stolen the headpiece from Marion, made a correctly proportioned staff of Ra, and discovered the Ark themselves. It stands to reason that many Nazis would have been killed during the first opening of the Ark, but they would eventually have figured out how to use the Ark as a weapon by keeping their eyes shut. However, it was Indiana Jones's presence as the end of the film that makes the difference. He finally recovered the Ark after it killed the Nazis on the island and delivered it to the U.S., thus keeping it out of World War II.
Of course. Yeah. It's largely joking when people say that, but it is a little bit weird that anyway, we've tread it over it, but yeah.
Good call. Cool stuff.
It's the plot time. It's the plot time. It's time for the plot.
Ladies and gentlemen, Raiders of the Lost Ark, or as I guess they renamed it, Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, which I remember not, I don't remember when that happened, Tim. Maybe you have that, but I remember the original thing it released as Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I don't think they ever renamed it.
I'm on Amazon Prime. I'm looking at it right now, and it is Indiana Jones in the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. At a certain point, they did because it was super confusing. Yeah.
IMDb is Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark, but the poster is just Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Indiana Jones, live, die, repeat.
Exactly. The idol, I'll throw you the whip, ladies and gentlemen. We're starting this bad boy with the old school Paramount logo, which I thought was cool, and fades into a real mountain range that must have taken them a while to find, as a man shrouded in shadows and a cool fedora hat, and again a leather jacket, halfway through summer in the South American jungles. Just got to be hot. And of course, our old friend Doc Octopus is there as well.
Yeah!
Tim, did you notice that?
It is first credited on screen role.
Awesome in this movie. So perfect in this role.
Covered in real tarantulas.
Fuck that. That's the day I quit acting forever.
They
that
were
scene
all
is
totally cool. The tarantulas that. Were great. They didn't move. Everything was good until they introduced a female tarantula, and then they all went crazy.
Ain't that
yeah, I quit acting.
They were all trying to get a nickel. You know? If no. I had a nickel.
That's why he hates spiders.
Alfred. Oh, damn, Tim.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Later, he would go and try to kill the biggest spider of them all.
Oh, shit.
Peter Parker.
That took me a second. I was like, what the fuck is he? I don't remember that in Spider-Man. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Even in Promising Young Women, they make a reference to it.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Indiana Jones, of course, has figured out where the entrance to this this cave is, or this this temple is, and with two pieces of the map. Meanwhile, one of his guides, Barranca, sneaks up behind him because he's like, okay, I'm going to take this one. He tries to shoot him, and of course, this is the first time we get the iconic whip with that snap as he turns around and whips the gun right out of his hand, and we see in the light, his eyes come into the light, and again, talking about that beautiful cinematography as Harrison Ford turns perfectly into that like noir eye light, we see Indiana Jones for the first time, and then the dude runs off in the forest. He's like, oh no, and runs off. He collects a bag of dirt. Oh no. And heads into the secret tomb that has a giant hole in the ceiling. Tim, did you notice that when they walk through? Because I'd have been like, what goes up there? Is that where they keep their Christmas presents? Yeah, it's there. Then Doc, this is the spider scene, and I'd prefer not to talk about it because it traumatized me as a child and probably is the reason why I hate spiders. We get this amazing gag with the light where he's like, whoa, don't go into the light. And then he puts his hand there, and then the spikes come out, and that's where they see the other professor that had been looking for it. And he's like, oh, you weren't good enough, old man. And I forget the guy's name. I didn't write it down. Indy uses his whip to cross a small little hole, a gorge in the ground.
I can imagine, Nick, being a young boy watching this.
Fuck, Tim.
Was the coolest thing in the world.
Greg, I don't know if you did this or not, but when I was a kid and not overweight, I would try to get ropes up onto tree branches and swing them, and they always broke. It never worked. But it was so cool. Tim, I actually had a bullwhip because of this movie. My mom bought me a bullwhip at a swap meet.
I think my brother had one that was so scary.
My brother had one that was brown, and I had one that was black, and mine was shorter than his, and I always had an inferiority complex about that because his looked more like Indy's. And so when he went off and discovered anything other than childhood toys, I co-opted that whip, and I was like, I'm going to start whipping things. But it was legit, like, whoosh, like you could cut your face with it.
Yeah, I can imagine your mom just being like, Nick, we've planted 7 trees out there. They're all down. Like, you need to stop swinging from them.
Oh, man.
to stop swinging from the trees. The thing that that really, really blew me away about the whole concept of using a whip to swing is that it's such a given to Indy, and you could tell he's done this a million times. Where to me, I'd be like, I guess could I try to swing across this? Because even towards the end, when Homeboy's backstabbing him, and he's like, give me the whip to fucking what's his
throw
face?
Me the, pass Alfred me the whip, Malina. I'll pass
the pass me the yeah. Me. To me, it's like Harrison Ford knows that he can use this whip for swinging purposes. It's such a given. But it doesn't seem like such a given in real life.
Considered it a power. Because, I mean, every time you use the whip to try and swing a thing, when the whip would wrap around, I'd be like, that's not secure.
No.
That's going to slide off.
That seems unsafe.
You got to move really fast.
Of course, he gets into the room with the idol, and we get the final little obstacle here, which is, you know, going to set the tone really for all the Indiana Jones franchise of trying to overcome these cool temple obstacles, which is the floor. If you step on it, it shoots poisonous blow darts at you. We've already seen the blow darts outside as well, because some of the indigenous people use them to keep people away from the temple.
And this has always blown me away, like even with Uncharted, just mechanized architecture, like old school mechanized architecture. It's fascinating to be still in Uncharted. Anytime it happens, it's like, what are the inner workings of this? Who works?
Do you think, is that a real thing? Like, does that exist?
I don't know, Blaine.
I doubt it. I mean, you have to.
It had to come from somewhere.
Well, I'm sure there were like, I'm sure there were like
traps
false
have to exist for a reason. Yeah.
But I can't imagine that they were so technologically advanced like 1,000 years ago when they put this idol on the statue that they figured out how to interrupt light. To control a mechanism. That's always the one where I'm like, I don't think we can do that today.
What do you
I
do? What if somebody invaded during, you know, the nighttime? Defense is rendered useless.
Here's the thing: they get a pass on that one, but they can't see the hole in the ground, and they just fall right through.
Nailed it.
And
that's
damn. Nick, before we started recording, we were talking a lot about the music and John Williams and how similar the score between the love theme from Star Wars and the love theme in this are so similar, where it's like the same three first notes as it like takes off, and it's still pretty similar throughout. There's another little motif here in the Indiana Jones score that I really love that reminds me a lot of the space theme that we never heard enough of in Empire Strikes Back.
The one that I swore was in every movie, and you're like, nope, Nick, it's just only in Empire. This one movie. One scene, yeah.
But it's the like epic, it's not the Indiana Jones theme, it's not the love theme. It's well, so it's like that, but it's just it's the whenever they see the like whenever they're in the final rooms. It's fucking cool. It's just like good. Oh, we're here. We are now in the temple. That is the thing. I'm like, let's fuck.
That is the Temple of Doom.
And of course, you guys have probably seen this parodied over and over. There's a bunch of things here that just get parodied all over them because they're iconic, right? Him weighing out the sand and pouring out a little bit out and then doing the quick swap with the idol and being like – and then again, the first moment we really get the indie character. What does he do, Greg? He's like, hey, I nailed it. And then all hell breaks loose. He's like, shit. And just runs through the room with all the blow darts and they flash past him. And of course, that's the part in the ride scene with the beginning with air blowing in your face. And then –
never rode the ride.
But really? Oh, Andy.
Always breaks down.
It's so cool.
It probably still will forever, but Andy, you're going to love this thing.
It's so cool.
I got that fast pass because it broke down.
Doc Ock, of course, has crossed the little hole and now has the whip and wants the idol in exchange. Once Andy throws in the idol, he goes, sorry, man. Good luck. Yeah, I forget what he says, but he's like, get the hell out of here.
So a fun thing for my life is, speaking of the Disneyland ride of Indiana Jones, growing up, the theme park most local to us was this place called Great America that is now California's Great America. But growing up, it was Paramount's Great America. Oh, so they had a whole bunch of like themed Paramount stuff, Nickelodeon stuff, all that, whatever. But one of the coolest things is the actual props. And there was it wasn't a ride, but it was more like a thing, like a museum type thing. But they had the idol. And like you can touch it, like the one from the movie, which is like super fucking cool.
Speaking of just Disney, I just always thought this was a Disney movie. I'm over there on Disney Plus, like,
it's gonna be. It is technically it's Lucasfilm, which means it is owned by Disney, but because of the licensing of stuff, Netflix has the license currently for the streaming. But I think in 2022, it's coming to Disney Plus.
I mean, I think even before the Disney acquisition, though, I just always thought, oh, it's at Disneyland. Oh yeah. A Disney movie. I felt like such an idiot. I was like, God damn it.
No, that's a honest mistake there. Because I would have sworn it was too. Because it was. I'm sorry, Andy. I'm sorry. I was trying to be nice. Of course, Indy jumps the gap and grabs onto a root. And again, another great Harrison Ford moment where he's like, good. And then the root slips and he goes, oh shit. Like he gets that moment of just, oh shitness again, climbs up. And then another iconic thing goes underneath the door as it's closing and grabs his whip as he goes, pops out, and then we get the boulder and the great dolly in as he turns around and looks over his shoulder and the camera's coming into him, and then we see this massive boulder that I'm like, how the did they get that up, and do they have to reset it every time? Like if someone fails, they got to push that thing back up. They're like, well, I know what I'm doing for the next month. He gets chased out and runs right into the tribes people of the Jovitos, who are there with Belloc, who has conned them into being on his side. And Indy takes a moment And his Bellick takes it away from him and says, "What is once yours is now mine," or whatever. And then Indy uses a brief moment where he loses his
or whatever.
Focus. Well, he says, "I have it written down later." Where he's like, yeah. "Once again, Dr. Jones, what was briefly yours is now mine." Jones bones out, and then Bellick sends him after him, and he gets chased over to the seaplane. Which, Tim, did you notice the call sign on the seaplane?
No, I didn't.
The lettering on the tail is OB-CPO. There's a lot of those cool little moments sprinkled throughout.
Must be a Star Wars fan.
I mean, yeah, Spielberg was really lobbying for that job he never got. I think, if I'm not mistaken as well, in the snake pit, in the Well of Souls, if you look closely on the walls, you can see hieroglyphics of R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, it's just like in the back there. They kind of threw those in. He gets into the plane. This is the first time we hear the theme as he swings into the water. And we hear the iconic Raiders of Indiana Jones theme. And then he gets in, rides the plane out, crawls into the cockpit. And what does he see, Tim? A big old snake named Reggie. And the guy's like, "Man up, bro. It's just a snake." And they take off. And he's like, "I hate snakes." And
how,
that's going to be
a thing.
How
did he not know the snake was there? Did he not come in with Jock? Was he just...
I like to imagine that Jock found the snake and was like, "You're my new pet, Reggie." And the snake's like,
"Call you Reggie."
I think Reggie was in his part of the cockpit. You know what I mean? Like, there he had his own stuff. And then it just went over there to...
I like to think that he's hanging by the tail of the plane with his whip the whole flight on the way over there.
Sure. That's how he worked those shoulders.
Yeah.
we cut back to the university where Indy has now cleaned himself up and he is teaching a class where a girl wrote "love you" on her eyelids, and this always super creeped me out when I was a kid. Did you guys catch this part?
Yeah. I thought it was weird.
It's not just her, right? It's every woman in the class sitting there dreamily, yeah, in love with Harrison Ford.
Similar to Dwight in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Remember that, Andy?
Oh my god. Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, that's the trope. That's where it started.
What a visionary Michael Bay is, man. Mm-hmm. Just dropping it.
Take
in
the best parts
Easter
of
eggs.
Indiana Jones, put it into Transformers.
Fantastic. Of course, Marcus comes in and they rap about losing the idol to Bellick. And then they head over because there are some army intelligence fellows that would like a word with Indy. Turns out Hitler's been sending archaeologists all around the world looking for the lost Ark of the Covenant. And I'd like to apologize because I think 2 weeks ago I said it had Jesus's remains in it. And boy, was I wrong. It is the original Ten Commandments were held in. The Nazis have discovered the city of Tanis, where the Ark might be kept, in a place called the Well of Souls, but the whole city got consumed by the desert in what has to be a very biblical thing. Indy tells the army dudes that the person they really want is his old mentor, Abner Ravenwood, but they don't talk anymore because Indy, we were not going to talk about that.
My name's Abner Ravenwood.
I'm Abner.
Such
Abner,
a pig
of course,
name.
Did they ever say that Abner went missing? He went missing, right? No one knows where Abner is. Doesn't matter. We get more
correct
stuff.
Yeah. No, yeah, okay. He mentions, Indy mentions we had a falling out. We're just not friends anymore.
But do we know where Ravenwood went? That's my question. Doesn't matter. We'll keep going. What's up, Greg?
Nothing. Go ahead.
We get more stuff. And this is where you start understanding, like, okay, they're going to pour on the exposition here, right? Okay, we got the Staff of Ra. And then on the top of the staff is a headpiece. That headpiece will, by the way, they don't refer to it the headpiece anymore. It's going to be called the medallion from now on. And that thing, you put it on top, you take it to a map room, you figure out which peg to put it in. And that's going to point to the massive scale model map room of where everything is. And then you got to measure some shit out. And then we'll find the Lost Ark of the Covenant. What's inside of it? I don't know. Probably something cool we can bring into the museum. Or it has the power to destroy all of mankind. One or the other.
Greg Miller from Kind of Funny.
I just did a quick search. You want to know where he is? He's dead, right? He's Marion's dad. Isn't that the whole...
I never knew if he was dead or if he... But how does he not... How does Harrison Ford not know that? Because he said, well, who you
they,
really
they had
want
a falling out over Marion.
Yeah.
Oh, so he just didn't know he died.
Yeah, he said, we were really, really good friends. Unfortunately, we had a falling out. I'm just not sure where he's at now.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, I'm confusing some of the stuff that happens in the later films as well. So they're like, well, you're our guy. Marcus comes over to report. You got the job. And Indy's super excited about it. But Marcus is – actually, before that, the army people were like, what do you think's inside of it? And he's like, I don't know, but legend tells that an army who carries the Ark before it is invincible. That night, of course, Marcus tells him he's got the job, but he gives him a word of caution. He's like, this is like nothing you've ever gone before. To which Indiana Jones is like, don't believe all that superstition. We're going to get this as an important relic. Besides, you know what a cautious fellow I am. He says right before he takes an old revolver and just chucks it across the room into his suitcase, which is such a great bit of storytelling there. Indy boards a plane to Nepal, but doesn't notice there's a Nazi spy aboard with him. And then we get another thing that's been parodied on Family Guy multiple times, and I'm sure you guys have seen before, which is the map with the red line that's going from stop to stop to stop. And boy, really makes you appreciate transcontinental travel right now, because all the places he has to stop along the way, it would have taken probably 3 days to get across the world. And now, Tim, we can do it in just under 1 day.
Bet was this the first time that effect was used?
To my knowledge, that I remember, like in pop culture, yeah.
Because that's cool. Yeah,
I'm sure like the older movies it was used before.
Because I would have been. I would have not even thought that.
I believe this is the first map ever used.
I would have not even thought that they were parodying Family Guy. I thought they were just parodying any other movie that's ever done this, because I feel like this was just the staple of showing how to show, you know, transportation travel on film. Yeah. Like that.
I'm sure back in like the 40s and 50s, this was a thing, and they were. I think they just. I don't know. I remember it being iconically from Indiana Jones.
I like that, when Family Guy does the in real time jokes. Right, the little thing is moving, and then like they stop somewhere and like. Character says a funny line, a little funny quip.
Let's go to McDonald's real quick.
Yeah, exactly.
We head over to Nepal, where we get introduced to Marion, and I love that she's just sitting there with all of her patrons begging around her, and she's drinking one of them under the table. Of course, once they all go, she shoos everyone out. We get another great shot where we just hear his voice first as he steps into the light, and we see a shadow cast against the wall with the fedora, and we hear, hello, Marion. And she knows exactly who it is, walks right over and just punches his ass right across the face because she is still pissed about how things got left.
I just looked it up. The earliest reference found of the map dotted lines is Car and Camera Around the World in 1929.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
That's how was ridiculous. That movie, Nick?
That was great, man. I saw it in theaters growing up. It was super cool. Little quiet. Little
got to
quiet.
Walk on set.
Meanwhile, according to Google, early world maps, the earliest known world map is classical antiquity. The oldest examples in the 6th and 5th centuries BCE.
Thank you, Greg.
Wow. Cool. That's Greg, awesome. Can you look up when they started using the aqueducts for me? That'd be great.
Sure.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I love hearing that.
And whips. Whips, please. Thank you. Of course. Indy wants the medallion, which he tries to pass off as being just a useless piece of bronze, but she knows better. She wants money, so I think he gives her $5,000 or $3,000, and she says, fine, come back tomorrow, making him really jump through some hoops. He leaves, of course, and it turns out that Marianne has been apparently wearing this massive medallion around her neck for, I guess, since her father left. I don't know. Feels like not the kind of thing, Blessing, that you'd want to wear underneath like your clothing, because it is the size of your body. But hey, when I was a kid, never really bothered me. I was like, cool, I'll just wear that big old medallion underneath there. Of course, she's not alone. Shortly after that, Tot, I think is how you would say his name, who is the creepiest person ever on film, comes in with some of his goons. This guy nails this role. I was terrified of this guy.
Yeah, because he's unsettling.
He's like greasy, you know. He's like this little creepy.
He's Slugworth.
Dude.
He's like Slugworth. Yes.
Very Slugworth. Yeah.
He's creepy as hell. Also, like, I'm not trying to, you know, talk about somebody's appearance, right? But you know,
you're about to.
You know when Hayao Miyazaki in his anime movies draws somebody to look kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
This is what this guy kind of reminds me of, like just one of those weird characters that doesn't look like a handsome character, you know?
Yeah.
Because in Miyazaki movies, it's either you're super handsome or you're kind of a weird looking character, and this guy reminds me of that.
I think he hits the triple threat too, of like not only coming off as very smart, but then also coming off as very mean and capable. Like when you're those three things, it's like you're a force to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Of course, he catches on very quickly. I'm sorry, Greg. Do we have an aqueduct?
Sorry, the earliest examples update? Of these date for, this is for aqueducts, from the Minoan civilization in Crete in the early 2nd millennium BCE and from contemporary Mesopotamia. And then, so that's, you got for aqueducts, it looks like you're looking at 2nd millennium BCE. Oh, and then great. Cool Whip was made in 1966.
Oh, no. Great. Cool Whip.
Perfect. Nailed it.
Just regular whip.
I haven't heard Mesopotamia since sixth grade. So thank you for that, Greg. And before we move on with the plot, let me tell you about our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Every single weekday, 10 a.m., we're doing Kind of Funny Games daily. It is the most watched live daily video game news show that it records in San Francisco. I don't know how many specific things I need to say for it to be a true statement, but somewhere in there, a lot of people enjoy the show, and you could be one of those people that watches live when we record on Twitch, or if news isn't your thing, after that show at 11 a.m. Pacific every single day, we're playing some video games for at least 2 hours, and it's been a blast. And guess what? I know a lot of you out there right now are like, well, I can't watch live when you guys are doing things because I live in Ireland. Well, guess what, Irish people? You can go to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays and watch the archives of the streams at your leisure. We like to give you options here at Kind of Funny. Thank you for all your support. Until next time, I love you. Keep watching the show, though.
Tim, whenever you heard Mesopotamia in third grade, was it ever super intimidating? Because like, this is going to come with a lot of reading, I feel
yeah,
like.
Yeah, so much reading. Yeah.
Every single time.
Anyway, I don't know why Greg interrupting right there just reminded me of the and more voice memos that he's been sending me.
Oh, man. Do you want to play some of them right now? Do you need Greg's to get off your chest? Voice memos?
I want to see if this works. Yeah.
Blessing, you're not on a lot of KF content.
There's nothing I hate more right now than Greg's face. Like, I'm looking at him listening to
I'm
all this.
I'm a normal person. Yeah, I don't know why. This is so weird.
Do you want to hear this? Do you want to hear this?
I want to be your friend. I want to be Andy's friend, so I send him messages. Go ahead.
See, Blessing, don't ask for these, because this is what you'll get.
Andy.
And then, so this is the one he sent this morning.
Are you in the same parking garage where you recorded the Joker bits?
No, the first one, Barrett. It sounds like he's in a fucking supermarket. That's what really throwing me off.
The first one was in the same Ronald McDonald parking lot, yes. And the second one, yeah, was I wanted to do it in the backyard and tell you about nature, but the people were working on one of the other airplane music, so it was like this weird, distant, like I'm on a shore.
I'm really glad I could play these now. I'm glad I figured this thing
figured
out. Here's another one that, bless you, may have missed this one. Mm-hmm. Oh, hold on. Long pause of silence.
This is awesome.
Where do the demons go? Now, you want the smoke blessing? This is the smoke you want me to start sending you on Instagram?
One more for Bless.
My favorite thing you do.
When was the last time you felt alive, Andy?
When did this become a thing? How did I miss this?
But Blessing, it's been a thing for a while. Every once in a while, Greg would send me just text messages. And so. Yeah, one time he said, #hashtag wolves over the airwaves. It's like another, I don't know, Bless. It's so hard to explain.
Wolves over the airwaves is genius. That's a good
job, you know, right? What? I think he was just texting me stuff. It wasn't over Instagram stories. Yeah, that's what it was.
Remember when he pretended to be a spider texting you?
That's the best one. Yeah,
that was great.
Don't worry about it.
Nick, please continue.
Okay, so the Nazis here are asking Marion for the medallion. She's kind of giving them the runaround. So he's like, Todd is like, we don't have time for this. Quickly realizes that what he feels needs to be done, and goes over and grabs what do they call those things? The Stokers. What's the word I'm looking for? From the fire.
Fire poker.
Thank you. And it is searing red hot. His intention here, of course, is to get the information out of her by torturing her, which is not cool with Indy. And we get a great moment where, right before it's about to make contact, the whip grabs it and flicks it out of his hand. And Indy's there, and all hell breaks loose. And, of course, the poker starts a fire, which burns down the bar. Everyone dies except for Tot, who looks over and sees the medallion in the fire, tries to grab it. But it sears his hand, putting an imprint of the front part of the medallion, not the back part of the medallion, which is important for later, in his hand. He runs out, cools his hand in the snow, and then leaves. And then Indy and Marion exit the bar as it's burning around behind them. And he was just like, look, I got the medallion now. We're all good. And she goes, oh, no, no, no. You're not getting this from me until you give me the 5K you owe me. I'm your partner, damn it. And they're stuck with each other. So from that point on, they head over to Cairo where they meet up with Sala. Shout out to John Rhys Davies here, who is amazing in this movie and also did all the VO for The Ride, which I always love hearing. So you'll hear his voice like echoing through as you're walking through waiting in line.
You know who this is, right, Bless? John Rhys Davies?
No. What's he from?
Played a little character called Gimli in the most Oscar award winning franchise of all time, Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
and Mario.
You probably know him better from the TV show Sliders.
I loved
it. Which him and Jerry O'Connell went through the different alternate realities, and it was a great show.
I've not watched either of these.
Man, things. I forgot about Jerry O'Connell. I love Blessing's disappointment when Andy led into Lord of the Rings.
Like, oh. I was so excited because I was like, oh, maybe this is something I care about. And he said Lord of the Rings. And I was like, oh, well.
Who cares about swing a and a miss franchises?
Yeah.
They also come with the world's smartest monkey, who will later die from a bad date. The fruit, not the kind we all had before meeting our amazing wives who put up with our farts.
Speaking of that, we were doing the body count in the John Wick movies. The body count of this movie is 64, including the monkey. Oh, 11 at the hands of Indiana Jones.
He kills a lot of people. A lot of people. Indiscriminately, see, he just shoots whoever he pleases with no repercussions. Let's see. Sala tells Indy that the Nazis and Belloc have found the map room, but they have not found the location of the Well of Souls yet. Belloc is with them, and he apparently knows his shit. The monkey rats out Indy to the Nazis, and they attack him. Marion smashes a dude over the head with a pan. I love this great comedic beat from Karen Allen here, too, where she picks up the frying pan. The guy picks up the knife. She goes, oh, okay, and then runs away. But she gets kidnapped by the Nazis.
I hate the face that guy makes on the sound. I hate that.
I love them running into the dark room and then like hearing a smack and then him falling out the door.
So cartoonish. I love it. It really reminds me of stage plays, like being in mm-hmm. theater in high school and every play we had to do had to have a chase scene. It was like, you have to have a chase scene in all of these children's like plays or whatever. And it just reminds you of that, of just like people running in circles for comedic relief. And then like a big guy walks into a room and then like he walks out scared of a little thing. Like
the Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, it's like Scooby-Doo. Yeah, this moment, like, three people walk in one room and then like two people run out and then like they go through different doors and all this shit. It goes back to that thing of it is very good, serious action with hints of humor sprinkled in.
Yeah.
And that one got me. That one, like when he fell down, I was like, okay, that's really funny. I really dug that.
It also like echoes the sentiment of you guys saying this is a lot of this is like a silent film, like watching a classic silent film, because that kind of comedy is straight out of like a Charlie Chaplin or Buster Keaton movie. Anyway, so that's great. A fun scene, of course. This is the best scene of the whole movie, Matt, where this giant man with his giant sword just like starts wielding it around and he just goes and takes his gun out and shoots him and then turns around, which I think we all love. Fun scene where Indy comes around the corner and everyone is carrying baskets, like the one that Marion's in, so he just starts knocking everyone's baskets down. To which I would play, hey, fuck you, dude.
What's up with the monkey? Was it a Nazi monkey?
Yeah. No, the monkey, I think, was just out for himself, man. Monkey's trying to make a dollar out there.
It was like, he seems very adamant.
Smart-ass monkey.
It was a Nazi sympathizer monkey, exactly. It wasn't
like, why is this monkey down with the Nazis?
It wasn't wearing the armband. You feel bad. It's, you know, it's product of his environment. Some guy gets it. He's a mercenary. He'll work with Nazis. All this poor monkey knows is to work with this guy. And, like, they're, like, this monkey is 2 to 4 weeks away from speaking English. You know what I mean? Like, this is a smart-ass monkey.
Smart-ass monkey.
Like, like, fucking knows his shit.
There's a different monkey where than the date monkey, right?
No, same monkey.
The same monkey.
It's the same monkey.
Because the monkey betrays them, but he doesn't even know it. He comes back, and Indy's literally like, all right, come on, monkey that just screwed me over. He doesn't know.
That's what I thought. Because the monkey legit looked like it was trying to get the attention of the bad guys that are running in the other direction, and that's how they come back and find her. Yeah, but then, like, the next scene, they're hanging out, and they're all cool.
I really like, there was actually a deleted scene where the dying monkey is like, Indy, get the close your eyes. Don't open your eyes.
Dude, okay. So going off this with this monkey sympathizer, I do want to introduce a new podcast with a Nazi sympathizer. A podcast within a podcast that I don't have a good name for, so I'm gonna need some help here. You know, obviously Nick Scarpino, if he is known for one thing, it's wigging out. But I do feel, Andy, like the last couple in reviews, we've made a new revelation. That's Andy or Nick's distaste of accents in movies, just period.
Oh, right? Wow.
So can we have a podcast.
Not good accents, distaste of when Americans try to do other accents. That's what I don't like.
Exactly. So, Andy, can you hit me with a theme song and a name for this podcast?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Tim, for, absolutely. Here we go. Here we go, everybody.
Nick doesn't like the accent. He hates it when they sound real fake. And Nick doesn't like the accent. Which accent is he gonna make?
Welcome to Accents. More like Ascents with Nick Scarpino.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we're judging this on, Tim. So if you want to host this particular podcast in a podcast, please do. Because I thought it was,
are you talking about John Rhys-Davies playing somebody he should not be playing? Is that what you're talking about?
This entire cast is like people in makeup to make them look. We're looking for people from Asia. Like, you know, should we get some stunt people? No. We'll just get our stunt guys and make them up in a very weird makeup. Okay, great. Yeah. Thanks.
I'm surprised we didn't start with Alfred Molina, because I have no idea like who he was supposed to be playing, where he was supposed to be playing.
I don't have that for you, but I do have something for you. There was a purpose for this. I didn't just randomly bring it up. All right. So although the Nazis speak German in many scenes, most of the lines were dubbed for the German versions of the film because the actors spoke very, very bad German with a very strong American accent. Some lines were simply wrong. On the recent DVD release, no German lines are wrong. The majority of the German lines are spoken by native German speakers with a slight South German accent that they redubbed for it. I just love that this is finally the time they were just like, no, this is bad.
They gotta go back and remake the movie.
You're watching the original cut of this movie in Germany in like 1981. You're like, what the fuck? Like, how hard is it to get German right? Anyway,
Nick, I'll tell you what. Here's a skit idea. Okay, we redub every Harrison Ford movie with Harrison Ford narrating over it. Like they did in the Blade Runner cut. Yeah, I'm down for that. Really unenthused. And he didn't know that the robot was him all along. Like, we got to do that, man.
I'm totally down for that. I love it. You got to do you do a better Harrison Ford than I do. I don't think I've ever tried to do Harrison Ford in my life. It was a little bit like Mike from Breaking Bad, but it's okay. Yeah, everything's a variation on that guy.
Usually is, yeah.
That's where you start.
Back to Indy. He is now getting drunk because he accidentally killed Marion chasing the Nazis that had her. He blew up the car by accident, and he's like, oh, no, that's a big bummer. So he drinks a bunch, but then the Nazis catch up with him, and they take him to Belloc, who wants to use the Ark to talk to God. He's like, I don't care about these Nazis or their agenda. I want to talk to God. I think that's really cool. And he's like, I think you do care about the Indies.
One of us.
Indy has a great line where he's like, I want to talk to God. And he's like, well, I know a way you can get up close and personal with him. And he's like, I'm going to ice your ass right now. Of course, everyone in the bar is on the take, on Belloc's take, because they all bring out guns. And he's got a gun. And then all of a sudden, a group of kids come in, sent by Sala to save him. And they escort him out of the bar. They head to one of Sala's old acquaintances, who helps them translate the inscription on the medallion. I think this, is where we're supposed to get a little bit of that backstory of don't look at the freaking scary monsters that come out of the thing. The monkey's owner, of course, blessing to your point earlier, the monkey's owner is there. The monkey has led him to them, poisons the dates that they're eating. And after the guy inscribes what's on there, which tells you the correct height for the staff, upon which the medallion must be placed, they all decide to have a good old just throw some dates up in the air. Greg, I know you and I got big mouths, so we're used to this, but I love taking things roughly the size of a golf ball, chucking it 5 feet up into the air and just trying to catch it in my throat, you know.
Bad dates. Like, that's,
and then of course Sala grabs it and goes bad dates because one of
anybody else watch this thing of like Harrison Ford walking around Palm on this date and like it's just like every fucking COVID germaphobe thing. Like, oh God, just eat it. Don't roll this around in your filthy hands. There's a pandemic.
The thing I don't know, have you guys ever had a date?
Yeah, I've had a few, Nick. I'm married.
Wait, hold on. Good job, Greg.
Thank you.
This is gonna be great.
They're sticky.
I had a date tree in the back.
Is all I was going to say. They're sticky.
Sticky or stinky? Oh, sticky. Sticky. Okay. Got it.
Like, it's not. I mean, I guess they're kind of smooth sometimes, but it's not the thing you want to be really rolling around your hands. Now I'm thinking about the dates that I've had, but once you bite into them, they get sticky.
I guess they're smooth sometimes.
This whole scene made me nervous. This whole scene, well, I think was expertly done. Aside from the fact that, yeah, one, that's disgusting, Harrison Ford. Like, just eat the thing. And then two, you're going to choke if you just, like, throw it up in the air and catch it in your mouth. Yeah, aside from that stuff, I thought it was excellently framed where you see him sneak in and just like see a random dude who you know is a bad guy just sneak in and pour just a bunch of liquid on these dates. And I was like, first of all, are they going to notice that the dates are wet and covered in poison? but like whatever. When he grabs it and they're like when they're talking about the shit and he's just like going back and forth and is about to eat it like multiple times. And you're just like listening to this conversation while also being like, oh, he's about to die. I thought that was just very excellently done. I was enthralled. I was into it.
I want him to pick up the day and go, it's not sticky.
Smooth. Greg, I'm sorry. I need to know the answer. Are dates sticky? Can you please Google that for me as we keep? Because I swear they're sticky, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm thinking figs. No, figs are smooth. It doesn't matter. Of course, during this, when they're translating the stuff on the medallion,
I have an immediate answer for you. Sorry. Yes, dates are also very sticky, which makes them useful as a binder in baked goods, such as cookies and bars.
When were dates invented?
Wow.
I wasn't it on like the third day God made him. I don't know, something like that. They've been around forever, man.
The third
day. Of course, important here is that the back of the medallion says take a couple of the measurements off to honor the Hebrew God, and which means to both of them, they're like, aha, Belloc is looking at the wrong place. He doesn't have the right size stick. Tim, his stick is too short. No, it's too long.
It's too short. Too long. Too long.
It's too long. Mm-hmm. Which is, I've been there.
Sticky
and smooth at the same time. Sala and Indy head to the map room. Music here is really, really cool. Kind of, again, reminiscent of some of the, I think this might be the thing you're talking about, Tim, where this song reminds me of that one from Star Trek or Star Wars. They head down there and they have to wait till about 9 o'clock in the morning when the sun hits. Indy figures out where to put it and we get that crazy Superman 2 or Superman 3 laser sound effect.
Nailed it.
And then the whole place goes up in fire and blows up because apparently that the jewel that was in that thing creates a laser that can burn through the center of the earth. But he figures out where they're really keeping the Ark, and so he and a crack group of diggers go up there and they dig all throughout the night. When they open it up, they look down and Sala asks the important question, why is the floor moving? And that's where I'd be like, again, let them have it. Let them have it.
It's over.
The Nazis, they want to work this hard for it. Let them.
Exactly. They throw a torch down there and it's just a room full of snakes. There's a lot of cobras in there. Ugh. And then Sala, of course, says asps, which are a very, very venomous snake. And then Indy asks the question to himself, why did it have to be snakes? And I asked the same question too. As this is happening, as they lower themselves into that, Belloc interrogates Marion by giving her a white dress, which I always thought was weird, and that she tries on basically just to placate him. And then she tries to use her extraordinary high tolerance to alcohol to escape, but it doesn't work because apparently Belloc is used to this liquor that came from his family vineyards. Indy jumps down and faces off with a cobra. This is another great scene where they actually did practically by putting, if I'm not mistaken, a pane of glass between Indy and the cobra. And so when he jumps down, the cobra goes and like pops up. That's a real snake. And that's awesome. Terrifying.
Ugh, fuck all of this, dude. Just terrible. All of this stuff sucks, man. Hated it. The worst part of the movie for me. I just had that tingly feeling, gross ass feeling.
Well, wait for the next one. Marion then again grabs a knife, tries to escape, but she is met again. She butts up against Tot, who comes in. And this, I think, is probably the funniest and creepiest scene altogether because he takes out what looks like this sort of like archaic, like nunchuck torture device and then folds it into a hanger. And the guy hangs this coat like all in one action. And I was like, that's brilliant.
Really good.
I really thought it was going to be some nunchucks. I was very excited. When he turned into a hanger, I was like, cool, you got me.
He really did. As Indy and Sala remove the Ark from its resting place with those poles, they take it over. Sala climbs up. They start hoisting it up. But morning has come, and Belloc looks over and spots the dig over on the hill and goes, oh, shit, something's going down over there, grabs all the troops. They head over, and then Indy looks up as the rope kind of comes down, and he's trapped, and Belloc is there, and he says, once again, what was briefly yours is now mine. But hey, we don't want to leave you just by yourself. We're going to leave you with some company. And they throw Marion in as well. And this whole scene has always gave me the heebie-jeebies, and I never, ever want to see a snake next to my heels ever, because of the scene. Indy sees some of the snakes going through the wall and thinks, oh, there must be something on the other side of that. So he uses the giant statue, tips it over, and goes right through the wall, to which Marion runs in, and then runs into a crypt with a bunch of corpses that scream at her. And I always thought the sound design here was a little heavy-handed, but it scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Scary as hell, though, yeah.
Yeah. And then from there, they head out to the airplane where we get the iconic fight between him and the giant bald. I keep thinking this guy's Russian. He's definitely German. A fun fact about this plane, Tim, I don't know if you have it there, but it's not a real plane. Did you see that one? Yeah, they just made this thing up for this movie because they wanted something that looked like that, apparently. And the pilot is producer Frank Marshall. And he was pissed after he took the job because he thought it was going to be a cameo, and it ended up being like 2 or 3 days of shooting, and he was stuck in that fucking hot cockpit the whole time. So never again. This ends up with Marion blowing the whole place up with a machine gun right after Indy tricked the guy into getting splattered against the landscape with one of the propellers. And this is the most
so cool,
awesome scene, and also incredibly cringy and horrible to watch when you were young. They spot Sala, who tells them that the Ark is being taken to Cairo by way of truck. Indy asks Sala to go back to Cairo with Marion and arrange travel back to England for them. I'm going after the truck. And Sala's like, how are you going to do that? And he's like, I have no idea. But he goes after it with a horse, and we get a great action sequence here, which I remember reading about when they talked about like all-time greatest stunts, but in like the stunt person community, and the one where he goes underneath the car is one of them. I don't know if you guys want me to spoil this for you or not. It's one of those things where I'll tell you a fact about it, but you'll see it every single time now.
And show it to me. I don't care.
So in order to accomplish that, the space between him and the truck wasn't enough. So if you look closely, there's actually a trench dug out that the truck is driving over, and which allows him to slide perfectly underneath it, and you can see it as the truck is moving. It's pretty cool.
They had to do
that.
Wow.
So the stuntman actually did that stunt where he climbs underneath the truck, and it was terrifying. But you can see, if you look close enough, you can see a little trench dug in, so it gives him a little more space.
That's really cool.
Then he got dragged, which is cool.
Dude's back would just be destroyed, man.
Andy, yeah. This is why people used to wear leather jackets back then. Am I wrong, yep. Greg?
No matter how hot it was, they were wearing leather jackets to protect from that kind of stuff.
Because everybody knows what was scary in the 80s.
Quicksand.
Lasers. Being drug underneath a truck. Lasers. Children. Having children prematurely was always scary.
Yeah.
And then, of course, terrifying. Anything that could penetrate. It couldn't penetrate a leather jacket was fine. So spiders were totally fine. He runs everyone off the road and takes the truck back to the ship. And you want to talk about movie? This movie keeps going on. This is the scene, Greg, I always forget is in this movie. I'm like, wait, they get on a ship? When the fuck does that happen?
Yep.
It's weird. It definitely feels like not only could this have all been cut, it just seems like a weird choice for them to have more things to do here.
It's weird. And of course, it's just an excuse to give him a touching scene with Marion where they can, you know, she can help
knock
him
boots.
Like, it could be tender, and of course they're about to knock boots, but with more indie humor he falls asleep, and she's like, ah, you can never get a break, can you? And I love the cut of him laying in the bed, and then the next morning they immediately cut to her laying in the bed and him cocking the gun, like loading the handgun, because the Nazis are there, and that's always really cool. He looks out and sees that there's a U-boat that they chased him down with, and again, Indy, why don't you call America and see if they can ship something over to Cairo to help you out with this bad boy, because you versus the Nazis is not something that I'm looking forward to here. He hides, and they take Marion captive. Belloc's there too. They grab the Ark, and they head over, and of course the Nazis can't find Dr. Jones. Neither can the first mate of the ship, who reports back to the captain and says, I've looked everywhere. I can't find Indy. I don't know where he is. And the captain says, I know where he is. He's right there. And he looks over as the fucking theme kicks up.
Yep.
And Indiana Jones is climbing out of the water onto the side of a German submarine to get into it. And it's my favorite scene in the whole movie.
This is another one that's hilarious, right? Where, check again. He's got to be there. I know where he is. Where? There. And he's just out in the water. It's like another thing of the humor. They went all the way without ever submerging.
Yeah.
I like to believe he got in there somehow. But I guess, I guess he doesn't, right? Because when they pull in, they just pull into the port, he's still on the top of the thing. Get another little fun bit of comedy here where he knocks out the world's smallest Nazi and then can't close the thing. And then another Nazi comes up to him, but we don't even see that guy's face. He just punches him in the gut and then knees him in the face, and his hat pops up and he grabs it and puts it on his head, walks out. And then, of course, chases the caravan into the desert and holds them hostage with an RPG, forcing Belloc to call his bluff. And he was like, dude, you don't want to see this thing destroyed. You want to see what's inside of it just as much as I do. And he's like, damn it, you're right. They get tied to a pole. Belloc starts the ritual. They open the thing up, reach in. It's just sand. Or is it? All these beautiful ghosts start coming out and then immediately turn to a horror show and melt everyone's faces. And somehow Indiana Jones knows not to look
away, Marion.
don't look at Aberyn. Look away.
Would love and to the know guy, the direction too, because like when you watch this one and just focus on them, it's a lot of. It's yeah, like, yeah, like, yeah. You can just see Spielberg on the giant megaphone, like shake more
without the special like, effects.
It's
yeah.
got to be like Empire when they're in the giant space worm, and how they did that was that they would pretend to fall while they just shook the camera to give that effect. You have to imagine like it was something like that where they must have felt like absolute idiots doing it in real time.
Of course. Oh, yeah. But when Steven Spielberg tells you to that there's ghosts whipping around your face, you believe it. You go, this is my livelihood right now. I got to make this happen.
Well, it's definitely they're like, hey, man, Harrison Ford's so good at just being like blind. So let's have him do that in Return of the Jedi. That'll be a great idea that everybody wants and is unanimously in love with.
Great.
It's not what happened.
Man, they hit that thing hard and they were like, they shot that first act. We're like, ditch out of this. Ditch out of it. So you got to be able to pilot the Falcon. Everyone gets their faces melted off except for Indy and Marianne. And then the whole thing gets sucked back into the arc and the lid pops right back on it like it's in reverse photography, probably because it was. And they survive and they kiss. And we cut back over to Washington where the army boys are with Marcus. And guess what? Their promise, Greg, to put this thing in a museum, this unbelievably powerful relic that could destroy the world. They go back on that promise, and Indy is pissed. Indy's like, we should put this in a museum where kids could potentially touch it and die. You know, like, put it behind a rope.
Like, didn't you just tell us you heard a bunch of people get eviscerated and sucked back into it? I don't know if we're going to put it out on display somewhere.
He comes out pissed. He says, this thing needs to be studied. It's a powerful relic. It needs to be studied. And the army guy goes, we are going to study it. Don't you worry, Dr. Jones. We've put men on it. And he goes, what men? And he goes, top men. Which became a thing, yeah. And then Indy runs out.
That's probably the thing I heard first before even watching the movie back in the day. Yeah, I just heard that quote so many times.
Indy, of course, finds Marianne waiting for him outside on the steps. And he tells her the army people are fools and they don't know what they've got there. To which Marianne replies, well, I know what I've got here. And they go off for a drink. Meanwhile, in an undisclosed location, a group of government workers put the Ark in a crate and file it amongst thousands of other crates that are exactly like in a warehouse that seemingly goes on forever. The end. By the way, this scene, the last scene was so haunting to me when I was a kid. I was like, oh my God, there's thousands of these things in there that are like super dangerous and scary.
What and are the possibilities now, like, are endless. You know?
Endless, man. We'll never see that warehouse again.
Yeah, I hope, man, it sucks.
Andy.
Seven syllable. Hold on, I'm trying to figure this thing out. I'm sorry.
See, this is what you're missing. Blessing.
Seven syllables. Oh, hold on one second.
Oh, God.
Hold on.
Greg,
seven syllables in the middle. You need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
Awesome. This is such a limp
rhyme button. Rhyme button.
Way missed.
That was the wrong button. It was supposed to be.
Oh my god! I also love that you can hear the key clicks with every time you hit any of the beats.
It. It's shut amazing. The fuck up, bro! Don't the magic, dude. This guy's breaking David Blaine's magic tricks on Fox. Remember that special? Jesus, dude.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your reviews in haiku form, just like Josh C. did. There's a long one here. Too much to fit in lines 5, 7, and 5. Please read all of mine. Nazi face melting. That's what they damn well deserve. Badass comeuppance. A perfect soundtrack with constant stellar action. My number one film. Timeless piece of art. Classic tale of adventure. Search for lost treasure. Now, I will say that, again, haikus don't need to rhyme.
I was about to say, are you still doing it?
Wasn't enough rhyme in there for me to, like, really give full credit. Adventure, treasure, it's a stretch, whatever. But shout out to your use of the word comeuppance in a haiku. Mm-hmm.
That's good. Very good. That's a hard one to fit in there.
That's
I did not. I did not know when you started the haiku. Like when you're in the when you're still in the instructions, I was like, oh, this is a strange one. And then you get into it, and I was like, oh, I think he started now.
Man, if you were to ask me how many...
The instructions were a haiku. Too much to fit in.
Well, that lines up.
In lines 5, 7, and 5, please read all of mine, was a haiku.
If you were to ask me how many syllables were in comeuppance, I would have guessed 6.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to say, Andy, that's like half the syllables right there.
Comeuppance.
It's only 3.
It's crazy.
But it seems like a lot more.
Yeah, it's a long word. A lot of vowels.
Jackson Hampton says, those stinking Nazis Crack that whip, Indiana. Face melting classic. Joe Mertens says, I think I could watch the chase sequence on a loop. Fuck those Nazis up. And finally, the last one, Grant Burton says, Solo's not in space. So good. It will melt your face.
Nah,
that's good. That's
give this one first a place. Chase.
Oh, first place.
Yeah. And obviously, it's number one because that's how things go. But before we get there, make that decision. It's Ragu Bagu time.
Ragu. Bagu. Not as clean. Not as clean as we need to.
Nah, we fucked that.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys, the podcast within a podcast, which we're lovingly calling Ragu Indie, where we rank the villains of the Indiana Jones cinematic universe.
We rank the Indiana Jones.
I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Nick Scarpino, Andy Cortez, hello, Blessing Eddie Uye Jr., and Tim Geddes. Where do we want to put the Nazis from Indiana Jones 1?
One.
So number one.
Are we rolling with the Nazis as a whole, or like Tot? How are we doing?
I would say Tot and Bellick are the main bad guys in this.
Yeah, the Nazis are more dressing to the whole thing.
Yeah, as this, I see the Nazis
does
are like
have
minions.
Named villains.
Tot and Bellick. Okay. I guess we put it at number one then.
Yeah, that's how
It goes number one, and I'll say like I deserve number one. These guys, sure, at the end of the day, they're just bad guys being bad guys, but they do that pretty well. And they, you know, do enough things to allow Indy to have a lot of cool things to do, which is
Todd is weird, extremely creepy. Todd is creepy,
very
both
creepy.
Bellick, like, Bellick and Todd is weird and creepy just in his presentation, I think. Bellick, I just feel like he's kind of a weirdo, where you seem like a normal dude, except for the fact that for some reason you're working with Nazis, and then you're obsessed with Marianne and make her dress up and do all this shit. That's just weird.
Well, he's French. So
that's true. Bonjour. That makes sense.
<Just kidding. laughs> No, but I think that was the distinction they made, right? Where they're like, he's a French archaeologist. He is like kind of a gun for hire on this. So he's not aligned necessarily ideologically with the Nazis, but he's still a creepy asshole.
He's like the monkey. He's a sympathizer.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Yeah. We're not ranking the monkey here.
Also, I'd like to.
We're not clear on how bad he actually is.
The monkey, a lot of gray area. A lot of gray area with the monkey.
Also, I'd like to apologize to any native German speakers if I'm just slaughtering Tot. I don't know if that's how you pronounce that at all. It's probably something else, but Tot. We'll see in the comments. Yeah,
Tot. Exactly.
Ragu.
Fuck.
Oh, you get a little big for your britches there.
I love it. It's my fucking favorite thing. We're going to continue this beautiful show, Kind of Funny in Review, with Baby Driver and next week, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which is just a great name. Fantastic name for a movie I can't wait to watch. Until then, Blessing, thanks for joining us for your first and definitely not last in review. Andy, Greg, Nick, love you guys. Love doing the show with you. Love that we've done like over 100 movies, which is insane to think about, right? But till next time, love you. Bye.